sorts of religions.
It's equally bad.
Yes.
PBS presents this program in color.
Hello. It's time for the Radio Dan Show, starring that crazy guy, Radio Dan.
Welcome to another episode of the Radio Dan Show. Are you telling me that I'm low, Jessica?
Way low.
Okay, if I'm way low, then I'll do something about it. Hang on. Let's adjust a few things here and see why the hell that we're so low. Okay. Maybe I'm finding reasons that we're low. Maybe. How about that? Do I sound any better now?
Way better.
Oh, okay. All right. Fantastic. Or I should say...
All right!
Okay, that's a little loud. Anyway, it's time for the Radio Dan Show, and I am your humble host, Radio Dan, and this is the Hour of Power. And we come and we bring you all kinds of movie and television news.
We bring it strong.
We bring it hard every... No, not every... Anything. Every Monday. How about that?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Mondays are not usually all that good. Although this one has the potential for greatness. I don't say that often. I only say that about 5 times a week, that we have potential for greatness. This happens to be one of those times. We have a special guest coming up tonight that we're kind of crossing our fingers on that, aren't we, Jess?
Well, just a little. You know, not everybody. Sometimes people know they have to be somewhere at a certain time, and they're doing things beforehand,
right?
Not expecting a... beforehand check-in.
That's true. Anyway, I should tell everybody who the hell you are if you're not familiar, if you're a first-time listener. That is my fantastic co-host, intern Jessica. Hey, Jess.
Hello.
Okay, so do you want to tell everybody who we have on the show tonight, potentially?
Monroe?
No, it's not the ghost of Ted Knight, but it's Monroe. It's Jim J. Bullock.
Hooray!
You want a hooray for that? That's right. Monroe from Too Close for Comfort. He spent a season on ALF. He was the center square.
I knew he was the center square.
Yes, in the 80s Hollywood squares.
I was thinking he was a steady top middle square.
No, he was the center. I believe Joan Rivers was first in that John Davidson one, but then he became the center square. Over time.
I'm going to ask him. I'm going to ask him if he was a different square at any point.
Well, I'm sure at some point he was a different square. Come on.
Well, that's my point.
Okay.
Now you're saying yes?
All right. I'm telling you that I believe that he eventually settled into that center square position. That's all.
Is this something you researched or you think?
This is something that I'm going from my memory
of having watched
it every day.
I'm pretty sure you're wrong. I'm pretty sure he was never the center square.
That he was never the center square?
I think he was steady, top, middle.
Top? Okay, so the top one in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
You may be right. But we'll find out. Well, hopefully we'll find out. But you know what? Before we bring Mr. Bullock out here, and we'll also talk about Jim J. and Tammy Faye show. Remember that show? Jessica?
I'm sorry. What?
Go ahead. I know. Wrap your head around this concept. Daytime talk show, Jim J. and Tammy Faye. Someone had the idea of taking Jim J. Bullock and pairing him up with Tammy Faye Baker for a daytime talk show. And that was on for a couple of years.
I'm not positive, but I'm thinking that if Tammy Faye Baker were in the same room as Jim J. Bullock,
uh-huh.
that the whole makeup thing would have been settled and taken care of.
You think he would have calmed that out, huh?
I don't know. I'm thinking. If I were to put my trust in anybody, it'd be Jim J.
Okay.
But I guess not, because she's still kind of clowny.
Kinda? All right. Well, before we get into discussing Mr. Bullock's career and find out what he's doing today, let's find out how you're doing today.
I'm doing good. Thank you for asking.
All right. So is there anything that's on your mind?
Are you trying to segue into my segment?
Yes!
Of course.
Well, Dan, I was thinking today. Where's your dream? You know what?
Sorry about that.
Here's the ball. You're on the other side of the room, totally not on it. You suck. You tell me. Oh, you know, just tell me what you want.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wait.
All right, can we restart then?
Yes, we can. We can restart it. Please do it again. Go ahead.
Well, today, Dan, Radio Dan, I was sitting back and thinking, what kind of job do I wish I had just for the free stuff?
Ah.
Like, I used to work for an herbal supplement company, right?
Herbal. Was that the kid from Family Matters?
No, it was that thing you'd get a lot in gym class, the herbal nurple.
Oh, man, jeez. Yeah. Very good.
Anyway, I used to work for a place that sold herbal. I said it again. Herbal is right.
Okay.
Why did I say it wrong? Why did I think it was wrong?
Because you
herbal supplements.
Right, herbal supplements.
And we used to get, you know, whatever we wanted. So I'd get, you know, the energy pills if I wanted. I'd get the echinacea stuff, which worked so well. Like, if you even felt a little sick, it was like little chicken soup powder that you'd mix with another chicken, like if you had Campbell's chicken soup.
Right.
You'd mix it in, and, God, you had the sniffles for, like, a minute, and it was gone. Mm. And there was, like, those granola bars and stuff like that. So it was pretty cool, pretty good. All my friends really liked the dietary supplements and stuff, so I'd always get them a whole bunch. If I had Alexa at the time, she'd be taking the kids' vitamins, which were really good and whatnot.
All right.
Also worked for Gateway, so every now and then, we'd get to keep the floor model stuff. So we got printers and, free AOL every time we signed up for a new computer on the floor.
Yes.
We had, like, 6 months of AOL for, like, 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking today, I was watching a commercial for Oil Volet.
Okay.
You know, because they have all this stuff. They have this wrinkle cream stuff. They have makeup. They have this and that. And I was thinking, that would be cool to work there. I bet you can get, like, a ton of stuff. And then you could always give it out for Christmas presents. Never have to spend a dime.
Okay.
And then
now, we're assuming that wherever you work, they're going to let you take free stuff.
Well, I mean, I work right now for a sewing notions company. And whenever I want sewing notions, I just go into the sample room and there's a box of stuff, like, for us to take.
Oh, who wouldn't want a box of sewing notions?
Well, I know that sounds lame, but when was the last time you had a missing button? Never, because I always sew it on for you.
That's true.
Also, the sewing friend of mine downstairs really loves it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's really neat, too, because whenever they're trying new stuff, they always ask me to try it out. Like little new, like, knitting needles and crochet needles and, embroidery kits and whatnot. It's cute. Mm. Anyway, I was wondering what your dream, be able to take home, whatever you want job would be.
Oh, mine? If I could actually work in a meth lab, that would be great.
Yeah, but I hear that you can't take any of that shit home.
Well, we're assuming you get to take stuff home. The meth lab, the plasma TV factory.
The plasma. Do you think they give away plasma TVs to as bonuses?
I hope so.
Or at least give.
If I'm working there, they better be. Let's see.
Well, you work for a property management place. You figure you can get some property, but no.
No, I can't. But I could get you.
Nothing. Paperclips.
Yeah. I get you someone to yell at you for having a roof leak. How about that? I can get you somebody on the line right now who's pissed about an AC being off. How about
the Willy Wonka factory?
A whorehouse. How about that?
Yeah, free herpes.
Well, you know, you got to take the good with the bad. Come on.
Well, you know, also they have this little place where you could bring kids. It's called Wanna Do City here. I don't know how wide it is. I don't know how Universal Studios it is. You know, one here, one there, one everywhere.
I always figure if it's popular here, then it's only popular, you know, within 20 miles of here. Because we really, in South Florida, we have, like, clubs and we have beach, and that's really it. We don't have anything else touristy for people, I don't think. I mean, does anybody come down here so they can go to Parrot Jungle?
Is that something?
Yeah, that exists.
Well, anyway, Wanna Do City is a place for kids to go in and do jobs.
Yes, it's like a
little theme park for kids.
Yes, it is.
And they can go be miners. They can go be fire people. Uh-huh. They could be doctors.
They could be dentists.
They earn money.
Yes, they earn money.
Which they can't get anything with.
No, they can't, but they can deposit it in the bank, and you can get a little bank book, or you can get an ATM card.
Nice.
Yes.
And then you can go spend that money by doing things like going and taking art classes. What else can they do?
They can take art classes, really?
Yeah, remember Alexa did that one time?
No, I did. I only went once with her. But it was a good time. Actually, it's funny because, you know, the adults go to Wanna Do City, and while you can't do anything if you're an adult, you know, it's all for kids. It's huge. It's just flipping huge in there. It's like a little city that they built, you know?
They have a circus. They have a little playhouse.
You know what they had? They had a radio station. And I was like, oh, Alexa, you got to do that. And she was like, no, I don't want to. It's like, what?
I know.
Listen,
I love that.
Can you indulge me just a little?
I love her to death, but at our wedding.
Right.
We had the little cut the cake ceremony and feed it to each other.
Yes.
Which we decided to include her in.
Yes.
And when we both were trying to just give her a little piece of cake to join us in, what did she do?
Well, I forget. What did she do?
She cringed away and couldn't do it. I was like, you're kidding.
All right.
Me. Yeah. You're not even going to do a photo op. Nice.
Nice. Way to go.
Nice jerky kid.
Thanks. Why are we going to talk about my kid being jerky? Anyway, what was your point with Wanna Do City?
They now have a Willy Wonka factory.
Yes, they do. They do have a Willy Wonka factory, and the line for the Willy Wonka factory is the longest line that there was when I went to Wanna Do City. All the kids wanting to get in. In fact, it was so long that my kid did not get in to the Wonka factory. They closed it, like, just before she went in. Like, she was literally two away from the front. There was her and some other kid. And they said, oh, no, I'm sorry, we're closed. It's the last one.
Oh, my gosh. How long did you wait?
20 minutes, something like that. I don't know. I mean, it's funny because we ended up waiting on and off with it. Like, she would stand online, and then I would go find something else. And I would say, you know what, come on, let's go do this. And then she'd come back, and the line was, you know, maybe a little bit shorter. Had it move all that much. Because I guess whatever it is that they're doing in there, it takes a good, you know, it takes a good 15 minutes to do. You know? But on the positive, even though she did not get to go into the work in the Wonka factory, she did get they did give her some candy.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, they gave her like taffy or something, like Laffy Taffy.
They said, you know what, you can't work here, but here's some taffy.
Yes, exactly. This is all we'd pay you in anyway, and you didn't have to do the work. Look at the anyway. All right, you want to try our guest?
Sure.
Okay.
I guessed we'll try our guest.
Wait, you didn't really just do that, did you?
I sure did.
All right. Well, fantastic. Okay. Let's try this out again and see what we get with Mr. Jim J. Wow. Feel that. It's like, what is that sound?
Hello?
Hello, Jim J. Bullock?
Yes?
Hello, how are you doing? This is Dan from Talk Radio X. How are you?
Hi, Dan. Good, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. I'm here with Jessica, and just so you know, you're on the air right now.
Okay, hi, Jessica.
Hello, Mr. Bullock. How are you?
Where are you guys at?
We are in South Florida.
Oh, nice.
Very nice.
We're in South Florida.
Fort Lauderdale.
Oh, yeah. We were down there with Hairspray.
Oh, nice.
Oh, that's right. They were down here not that long ago. I didn't realize you were in that.
Yeah, I was on tour with it this past year, and we spent a month in Florida, and Fort Lauderdale was one of the places we were at. So, well, actually, it was Miami, so, you know, the South Beach, but it was so beautiful. It was my favorite leg of the trip.
Oh, hey, score one for us.
I know, high five.
That's right, fantastic. Are you still doing hairspray?
No. I finished with that back in this past summer, so I'm back in L.A. now.
Okay. Now, I've got a lot of things that I'd like to ask you about.
Oh, my God.
Well, all right, the first thing I got to start asking you about is Too Close for Comfort.
Yes.
How did you get the role of Monroe?
Well, you know, they were looking for the character, and I went and I met with the producers, and I had a very nice visit with them, and I left, but I never heard back from them. And, like, I was on contract with ABC at the time. And then, like, 4 months later, the networks contacted them again and said, we want you to see Jim Bullock again. And they said, we've already seen him. And they said, and he's not right for the role. And they said, oh, what do you mean he's not right? And they said, well, he's too fat and too gay. So,
but that's your charm.
Well, he's lost some weight, so you really need to see him. So I went back in, and that's sort of the beginning of how it started.
Okay, now let me ask, what was it like doing that show? Like, what are your favorite memories from doing that?
Well, you know, that's my first show, so I have a lot of favorite memories. Working with Ted, working with Audrey Meadows, you know, getting to be on a network show, you know, at that time was a really exciting thing. I mean, it's an exciting thing right now, but I mean, back then it was three networks. There was no cable, there was no HBO, you know, there weren't 150 stations or channels, and so it was three networks. So if you were lucky enough to land one of the networks, then you were very lucky indeed. So it's just chock full of great memories. And like I said, it was my first job and my first forte into the world of professional acting. So it was a really exciting time for me. I was so young, and it was great.
So you didn't do anything before that?
I really didn't. I'd done, you know, some stage work, but not really professional stage work. And I did stand-up, and that's how I got my start in stand-up is I came out here and I started doing the Comedy Store and the Improv, and ABC saw me at the Comedy Store and they put me on a development contract at the time. And so that's how it came out of that.
Oh.
Now, watching that show when I was a kid, one thing that always confused me about you was the fact when I would watch the opening credits was that your name was spelled J.M. That perplexed me to no end, and I used to think, how do you even say that?
You don't. I mean, it didn't make any sense. Let me tell you where the JM came from. And the original JM came from me just being out here, being so green and going, what can I do that's different that's going to make someone see my name and remember it? So I thought, I'll take the I out of Jim, which made no sense. So it was Jim, actually. And then when I became a member of the Screen Actors Guild, there actually was another Jim Bullock, and so I couldn't – there can not be any two actors that are the same name. There's a Michael J. Fox, there's a Michael Fox. And so
yeah.
There was a Jim Bullock, so I had to put my middle initial in to be Jim J. Bullock, but I wanted the I out. And so the lady at Sagwood, that didn't make any sense.
Okay.
And I said, it's kind of this thing. And so she went, okay, well, honey, whatever you want, so you know, we'll have it. Jim J. Bullock. So I went through the 80s sort of establishing that, you know, that J.M.J. Bullock. I was called J.J. I was called everything. But in 1989, I had a manager who said, you know what, this is ridiculous. Just put the I back. And it's one of those few things I regret in life because it's sort of like I spent the better part of my career, you know, getting that name out there. For better or worse, it was what it was. And then I put the I back, and jokingly I say I had a bowel movement in 1990. And so I put the I back, and sort of since then, I've been explaining why there's an I in Jim J. Bullock. So there. It's a fascinating story, isn't it?
You know what?
It was wonderful.
I'm telling you, I've always wanted to know. So personally for me, it was a great story.
Really? Well, yeah. I'm sorry to send you into such a tizzy when you were young.
I get into tizzies all the time.
Oh, don't we all?
Now, how was it to work with Ted Knight? Did you really get along with Mr. Knight?
I did. I got along really well with him. I just, he was like a father to me. You know, I really had so much respect for him. And I was, you know, I sort of feared him, like, because he was sort of bigger than life. But he was very, very kind to me, and he took me under his wing, and he always treated me with great respect, and he really respected my talent. And, you know, Ted really saw where, had it been me or whoever else it would have been, the character of Monroe, when it was added to the show, because he came in, like, and it was added, like, into the third or fourth episode, was really needed, because he couldn't be mean to his wife and his daughters. I mean, that wouldn't really work that well. So he really needed someone to bounce off of. And so, you know, I was the lucky one that landed that role. But Ted really did sort of see a young, you know, himself in me, you know. So he really took me under his arm. He was great. He was very kind to me.
Okay. Now, I'm sorry. My co-host here, Jessica.
Oh, my goodness.
She does this Ted Knight impression.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so embarrassed
I don't know how familiar you are with impressionists. This is probably the worst impression anyone has ever done.
Yeah, for some reason, I don't know. I must do it at least a couple times a week.
Yes, she does it on the air all the time. So I would love it if you could just judge how accurate her impression is.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so embarrassed.
Okay.
Go, Jessica, go.
Okay. Monroe.
That is terrible. No, Jessica, that's really not good.
I told you it was the worst impression ever.
I've heard it before.
You know what? It's all there, though. The emphasis is there, just there. You just need to lower your voice a little bit.
I'm telling you, we go on the air, and, like, I don't know, 20 minutes in, she's saying that.
Well, that's great. And I hope that she continues saying it.
Five nights a week, she's yelling at Monroe. Doesn't make any sense at all.
That's why it's so wonderful that you're on the show.
You know, it's so weird because I haven't seen that show, honestly, in years and years and years. And recently, my mom lives in Texas, and I was back there visiting her, and I took her season 2 and 3 of the DVDs that are out. And so it was a Sunday afternoon. We didn't have anything to do, and I said, well, let's just watch them at Too Close for Comfort. And we popped that thing in, and it was so delightful watching that and reliving those moments. It's so weird because that's 25 years ago, and it's so weird to know where I was and you know, and relive that time and remember things that were happening, you know, off camera at, you know, while we were taping it and everything. But it was actually, you know, it was actually a really funny show. We had some really funny stuff that we did. You know, I've downplayed it a lot over the years, but I think it was a good show.
Ah, that's good to hear. I like that. I do.
I'm glad to hear that you're not embarrassed about it like you are the JM.
Oh, you know, I'm not. I'm not embarrassed about it at all. I'm very proud of it, actually.
Awesome.
Okay, I have a scenario for you, Jim.
What is it?
All right, say you're at the supermarket and, you know, you're buying some fruit or something.
Yeah.
And somebody comes up to you and says, hey, Monroe, what are you doing? How do you respond to that?
Well, you know, it's always flattering when people remember you. I mean, you know, it used to bother me that, you know, it was Monroe, you know, that people didn't know my name because Monroe was 25 years ago. But you know what? It's sort of an honor that people even remember that because, you know, I don't even remember people's names on the real actor's name. I remember their character name, and I'm constantly doing it all the time, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, that's very cool.
It's just flattering whenever someone recognizes you and remember it. You know, I get that gay guy a lot.
Oh, God.
Which is whatever. However you want to remember me, it's fine, you know. It's flattering always to be remembered.
That's true. I can't imagine.
Recognize, yeah.
I can't imagine that I'm going to get a whole lot of intern Jessicas. Not yet, anyway.
I would invest a whole lot of hope in it, but, you know.
Especially with my impersonation act.
Okay, the next thing I got to ask you about is I remember you turning up in the last season of ALF.
Yeah.
Was that a pleasurable experience for you?
No. I wish I could say it was, but you know what? It was, I had just come off Hollywood Squares, and Hollywood Squares was an absolute party. We partied for 2 years, and it was just so much fun, and we all enjoyed being together, and we traveled together, and we were playing tic-tac-toe and getting paid great money and just having so much fun. And then I got onto ALF, and, you know, I worked really hard to get that job. They really should have gone with the other actor because they came down to two actors, and they really should have gone with the other guy because he was more what they were looking for. But then they hired me, and then they brought me under the show, and they really tried to force me into a box that I really didn't fit.
Oh.
And so it was creatively frustrating to be on that show.
Wow.
And then secondly, it was such a depressed group of people.
No.
Really?
It was just a miserable group of people, and they shot in a warehouse over in Culver City, not even on a studio lot, and it was, so it wasn't even like you were in the energy of a studio lot. You were in some warehouse in some isolated, you know, district, and so there was no energy around, so all you had was what was in that warehouse, which is where they shot out, and I don't know, it was not a fun experience for me. I was frustrated and just didn't have a great deal of fun with that show.
Wow. Do you think those people knew that they were on the wane with that program?
I think that they knew that they were in their last season, and I think they were, you know, sort of hitting walls, and you know, it might have been different had I been there for, you know, through season one through season four. Maybe it was a different tone, but by the time I got there, it was pretty bad.
Oh, wow.
Okay. But, you know, he mentioned Hollywood Squares, and
yes,
that I definitely got to ask you about. Now, we were just having a little discussion beforehand. Now, I remember you as a center square.
And I remember you as not a center square.
Right. I was really not a center square. Oh. Joan Rivers was a center square.
I told you.
See, in my head I had it. Well, Joan Rivers was there first, and then Jim Jay was in there.
No.
All right, I'm wrong.
You were like in the top, right?
Wait, you're both right. Because I subbed for Joan when she wasn't there a lot of times. So a lot of times I was in center square.
Oh.
See, that partial credit for me.
That's right. So you both kind of win.
I'll take it.
However you can get it.
So how do you end up on Hollywood Squares? How do you get that?
I guessed it. You know, I was kind of had a reputation for being good at game shows because I'm such a big personality. So they invited me to come on one week, and I had a great time. And so that sort of led to when that was their first season. The show ran for three seasons, and then the second season they decided to start like a family of regulars. And I was one of the ones that they thought of, and so they asked me to come and be a regular, and I was really happy about that.
You know, I remember, like, game shows back then, and they were just so much more fun than they are now. Nowadays, I guess, game shows have come back recently, and they're all dark and depressing and heartbeat in the background, and you have to get this right or else you're going to die.
Well, the stakes, you know, it's really about money now, isn't it? I mean, because back then, you really look at the prizes you won on Hollywood Squares. You might win, like, you know, a Chevrolet or something. It wasn't a fancy car. It was a Ford or Chevrolet or a Mercury or something like that. And so, and you know, only every so often did somebody actually win a car. So you would walk away, if you did well on that show, the contestant would walk away with maybe $3,000 or $4,000. But now you've got, you know, these shows like, what's the one with the suitcases?
Oh, Deal or No Deal.
Deal or No Deal, and you're playing for $1 million, $750,000, $500,000. These are life-changing sums of money.
That's true.
And so it's really the competition to win the game is so much. I would be horrified if I were a part of a game show where I was holding in the balance whether or not I was going to, this money could change this person's life, that I was, they would never put me in that situation. I, as a matter of fact, I tried out for Pyramid and I was so bad.
Really?
No, because I just wanted to joke and have fun, and I wouldn't get serious with it. And Pyramid was like $100,000 pyramid back then, so yeah. That was a lot of money too.
Right.
But it is so much more about the money now than it was back then.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the squares in the '70s. It was just, you know, it was a cocktail party.
Yeah, yep. It really was.
Oh, my God. People were in their squares smoking and drinking, and it was just very, very, very fun and casual. And it was more of a variety show than anything else, and certainly not about the money.
Yeah,
you see, those are actually the game shows that I prefer. I like the old Hollywood squares. And
huge match game fans.
Yes.
Out here.
Oh yeah.
Love
those
match
are just
games.
Entertainment.
Yeah, you know, the first kind of show that I ever saw that was like that was the 80s Hollywood Squares that Jim was on, because, you know, it was a little too young for the 70s one. And I just love that kind of show. It's so much more fun to watch.
Yeah, I
agree with you, and maybe that's just me, you know, longing for the past or whatever, but I agree. I really enjoy it. And, you know, probably squares will come back at some point, and it's sort of like one of those things that gets reincarnated every, you know, 6 to 10 years, so
yeah.
It might come back again. Who knows?
So what did you think when they brought it back? I think it was Whoopi was in the middle, no?
Yeah, that's right.
I thought it was great. You know, it's had two incarnations since then. It was the Whoopi Goldberg one, and then they did that last one, which sort of didn't last very long. Whoopi did, like, 5 years, and then they changed the look of it and got a little bit more serious with it or whatever, and it didn't last very long. But I thought Whoopi's version was great. Bruce Valanche was on it, and very witty. It was a very witty show.
Yeah. How are you doing, Jim?
I'm great.
Oh, good.
Fantastic. You know what? Here's what – do you get asked about Spaceballs a lot?
Yeah. You know, it's cool because, you know, I've not done that many films in my career, and so it's really cool that one of the few films I've done has gone into cult status.
Oh, totally, yeah.
It's, you know, it is great. And Spaceballs came out, it was sort of a disappointment to everybody. I know it didn't do the box office that they were hoping, but it sure has snowballed as time has gone on and become sort of this cult, you know, classic films. It's great.
Oh, yeah. It's hard to find someone who can't quote the entire movie.
That's
exactly.
True.
Exactly.
Yeah. So how was it working with Mel Brooks?
That was a good experience. I only got to work for 10 days on it, but I had a great time doing it and meeting all those people, John Candy. I mean, I got to work with John Candy. How cool was that?
You know?
So it was, and being in a Mel Brooks film, that's pretty remarkable in itself. It was a great experience.
Okay, jumping ahead here, here's something that I definitely remember because it was one of those things that I would look and I would go, that, I'm sorry, who's in that? When you did your talk show with Tammy Faye Baker.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking, wow, what a combination.
What a combination.
Now, how did that come about?
Well, I got a call from Dan Weaver, who was at Fox Lab at the time, and he said, we've got a talk show with you in mind. Would you be interested in getting together and have coffee with me? And I was talking about, sure, absolutely. And I was actually thinking I would love to do a talk show, and so it was sort of a dream come true. So I met with him, and he said, now it's a co-host situation. I went, okay, that's cool. He wouldn't tell me who the co-host was.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, boy.
We kept having, you know, coffee, and I kept thinking, and my mind was like a Rolodex going, could it be this person, could it be this person? And finally, at the end of it, I said, well, who is this person that you're wanting to couple me with? And he goes, Tammy Faye Mesner. And I went, Tammy Faye Baker? Yeah, Tammy Faye Baker, but her name is Mesner now. And I went, she's crazy. And he just said, would you meet her? And I said, absolutely. I said, I'm gay. Of course I would meet her. So they put us together. Tammy and Ro came up from Palm Springs, and we met for like – we had like 10 minutes on that when we first met to chat and say hi to each other. And what hit me first and hardest was that how pretty she was. I was really struck by what a beautiful woman she was. She wore too much makeup, but I thought, she's really beautiful, you know. And then they gave us three tabloids – and they said, okay, we're just going to improv a little talk show here. So you guys get over there on that couch. And this is just in an office with fluorescent lighting, no set, no a handheld video camera. And they said, you know, give a post chat, give us a middle and an ending. And so using these three tabloids, they went go, and we went. And they started taking this little crappy piece of video and putting it in their focus groups with all of Fox's upcoming shows, and the response they got from the people was like, we want to see that show, that bizarre talk show.
Wow.
So out of that sort of Fox went, oh, well, we must have something here. So they started doing live run-throughs, and those sort of snowballed into a pilot, and it sold, and it was a really fun, exciting ride for all of us involved because we all believed in it so much, and it was just ahead of its time and not in the right hands.
So let me ask you, Tammy Faye, was she cuckoo bananas or what?
You know what? She is a delight. She is, Tammy is one of the nicest, most genuine people you'll ever meet. You know, she's, it was strange for her because, you know, she's been so used to, at that point, working in religious TV and having, you know, you don't go to commercial break. And Tammy would be like, well, why are we going to commercial? It's like, well, you know, we got sponsors, and so it's like, we have to go to commercial. So I sort of had to reel us in and out of commercial breaks. But you never knew what was going to come out of her mouth. You never knew what she was going to say next, which was always keep you on your toes, and it was always kind of exciting and scary at the same time.
Well, I tell you what, I think she was on The Surreal Life, right?
She was on The Surreal Life, and she was fantastic on The Surreal Life.
I'm telling you, she seemed like a doll. She seemed like just the sweetest lady.
She is. I mean, Tammy is what you see is what you get. There's nothing artificial there. It's, you know, she is one of the most genuine Christian women I have ever known in my life. She really practices what she preaches, and she's not a judgmental person, and she's just all about love.
Well, you know, I'm so glad that she has got, you know, it sounds weird because The Surreal Life has got such this weird look at it. You know, it's the whole design is to get, you know, celebrities and put them in a weird situation. And she seems that she's out of that weird, overly Christian, overly, you know, looked down upon Christianness, and now getting, you know, some, you know, realization for like a nice lady, you know.
Yes, I think so too, and I think The Surreal Life had a lot to do with that. And you know, The Surreal Life is basically, like you said, it was just sort of kind of put together, and you sort of took these kind of odd celebrities and stuck them in a house together for however long they stick them in together. And most of the time, you know, you don't come out looking so well in a situation like that. And when I heard Tammy was doing that, I went, oh no, you know. But she really rose above it, and she actually rose. She raised the bar for that show, and I think that show benefited from it. I know Tammy benefited from it, and it was a win situation all the way around.
I think so. I thought it was cute.
Huh. So Jim, would you ever do something like this in real life?
You know, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, it would really depend on who and who was going to be in it and everything. I actually was approached this past year with a reality show where they were going to put 80s TV stars in a house together, like three people from each show, and we would compete. But we were going to live in this house together for like 2 weeks, and then the winning team walks away with so much money or whatever. And so Deborah Van Valkenburg and Lydia Cornell and I were on board to do this, and then it just sort of lost its steam, and I think it fell apart, or maybe it's happening without us. Who knows? But whatever. I mean, we were definitely going to do that because I thought, you know what? I would love to be with Lydia and Deborah for you know, 2 weeks and people to
have
fun together.
I know. Whoever stopped that better get it back on the
board. I mean, it would have been great. I think it would have been a great idea. You know what? It might not be dead in the water. I don't know. Maybe they just had to regroup or whatever, but for whatever reason, it's not happened, and I've not heard any more about it. But you never know; these things might come up later on or whatever.
I got my fingers crossed.
Ditto. Now, the one last thing I want to ask you about is, how did you get involved doing Queer Duck?
Well, I auditioned for it.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, I actually, can you believe I had to audition for it? I got this, my agent called me up and sent me the sides over, and I read it, and I just, I went in, and that voice just kind of was, I just raised my natural voice a little bit and landed the role. And I've had, that was my first experience with voiceover work, and voiceover work is the best, man. It's the best.
Yeah.
Like that.
It is. You don't have to look good. You just got to pull out of bed and warm up as you're driving there and go in and do 30 takes on everything. And, you know, it's great.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I tell you, Dan and I have been watching a few of them this week, and it was pretty funny.
It's very funny. Did you guys know that there was a feature film, Queer Duck the Movie, that came out last year? You can actually rent it at your video store. It's really funny. It's a musical, and we had a ball doing that, so it was great.
How long did it take you to do the voiceover movie? Like,
I put all my stuff down in 3 days.
Wow!
No kidding.
I guess it's all in the animators, huh?
Yeah, it is, and the animation took like 9 months. But
wow.
I went in for 3 days, and it was just me in the studio. You know, there was nobody else. Originally, when we started Queer Duck, all the actors would come in, and we did it like a little mini play in a studio. But that gets kind of expensive, so now they just call us in one at a time, and we put all of our stuff down and go home.
Well, I know that we're gonna. Get that. I really, those little shorts were just freaking hysterical.
Man, they are funny. Mike Reese writes all that stuff. And, you know, he's married. He's not gay. He is, but I'm like going, you have your ear to that gay wall really well. you know, you got it all. You got stuff in there that I don't even know about, you know.
Oh,
so he's very, very funny.
And all the characters are so funny.
I know. They're brilliant because they were great voiceover actors.
Yes. The guy who sounds like Bipolar Bear, who sounds like Paul Lynn.
Probably Gay Gator. Oscar Wildcat. So stupid.
It is. Oh, man. So what are you working on these days, Jim?
Well, actually, I'm in development for a reality show for myself. Can you believe it?
No kid, a reality show about you?
Well, here's what it is. I'm working with World of Wonder, which is a production, a really cool production company, and I think we're going to try to sell a show where I'm going into beauty school for 9 months, and they're going to follow me through beauty school.
Oh man, that sounds great.
How wrong is that? I know.
It's completely wrong.
I'm really excited about it. I've never done reality TV, so this will be the first time for me. So, you know, keep your fingers that it happens.
Oh, okay. So you haven't done any sort of filming or anything yet.
Did I just say keep your fingers that it happens? I think I meant to say keep your fingers crossed that it happens.
I thought maybe I just cut you off.
No. I think it was my sad brain.
So you haven't had any cameras following you or anything like that yet?
Not yet, no. Right now, I literally just, we just came to an agreement on this, and so we're just starting to work on that. So.
Okay. Well, you sound very excited right now. I'm thinking, like, a couple weeks afterwards, you're probably like, get these damn cameras out of my face.
Well, you know what? It will be weird. It'll be an interesting experience to have cameras in your life like that. It's sort of horrifying,
yeah.
You know. But, you know, I look at reality TV and I go, why not? At first it was like reality TV, and it was like 3 or 4 years ago. It was like, oh, my God, it's like sinking to the lowest level. But, you know, reality TV is here to stay. It's not going to go away.
Nope.
And in many ways, it's far more interesting and compelling than scripted shows.
That's true.
So, hey, if you can't beat them, join them, right?
Yeah, I say...
With open arms, Jim.
I say the only kind of reality TV that I'm interested in is the kind that has celebrities in it.
Yeah.
You know?
Really? You're not interested in just like a Big Brother or a Survivor or something like that?
No, I'm not. I need to have celebrities in there.
I am, though.
Say.
Okay.
I make up for him. I watch all that crap.
Well, I watch The Amazing Race, and some, you know, they don't have celebrities, I don't think, on that one.
No, but I watch things like a lot of the Bravo ones, like Top Design and
right.
Top Chef and stuff
stuff like that.
You guys will have to watch mine if it comes out.
Yes.
Well, you see, you would qualify for my rule for watching a reality television show.
Well, there you go. At least I know I have one viewer, at least.
Two.
Yeah, but we only count as one. We only have one television.
Oh, that's
so
true.
So, yeah.
Oh, well. Well, that's fine. Hopefully it's a Nielsen.
Yeah, that way we'll count for like 1,000.
Okay, what is Breaking the Effing Rules?
Breaking the Effing Rules is a movie that I did last fall, with John Menendez. You know who he is? John Menendez wrote, he's the announcer on The Tonight Show.
Oh, yes, okay, I know who he is.
He was Stuttering John for Howard Stern.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And he wrote this movie and called up my management and said he would, you know, like to have me come in and meet with him, and he thought I'd be really good for the part. And so I went in, read it, and I thought, yeah, I'll do this. And so it's probably going to come out this summer, I'm assuming. I don't know, I haven't heard, but it's all in the can, so they're editing it now. So hopefully it's a good movie and, you know, turns out to be funny.
Okay. All right, now I have a personal favor to ask you, Jim.
Yeah?
Okay, feel free to say no.
Sure.
Okay. I was just wondering if you could just say something for me. If you could just say, hi, this is Jim J. Bullock, and you're listening to Talk Radio X.
Sure.
Okay.
Just tell me when.
All right, hang on 1 second. Okay, whenever you're ready.
Hi, this is Jim J. Bullock, and you're listening to Talk Radio X.
Awesome.
Fantastic.
Is that fantastic?
That was fantastic.
Oh, great. Good. I feel so good.
Jim J., thank you so much for coming on with us. I do appreciate you spending your time with us tonight.
Oh, you guys, thanks for calling. I appreciate it so much. I've enjoyed talking with you.
All right. Have a good night, sir.
Thank you. You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, everybody, that was Mr. Jim J. Bullock. Jessica?
That was awesome.
Did you have a good time talking to him?
I had a great time.
Yeah, I had a good time talking to him, too. Very, very nice guy.
I can't believe you brought up my impersonation.
Oh, come on. You knew that I was not going to let him get out of here without subjecting him to your awful Ted Knight impression.
You know what? If there's something to be said
right.
about being able to say...
Yes?
That I did my Ted Knight impersonation
uh-huh.
for Jim J. Bullock.
You did a Ted Knight impression for somebody who knows Ted Knight.
Knew.
Who knew Ted Knight.
That's awesome.
And
what a great guy.
Right? I know. Like he heard it and then he didn't hang up.
I know.
That was probably the most impressive part right there. Was he has an obvious high tolerance for your nonsense.
Well, then I will definitely watch his reality show.
Well, that was a given.
Anything, I know. I mean,
9 out of 10 celeb reality shows I watch. You know, it has the only ones that I don't watch are the ones that are going to be no fun. So ones like the Tom Sizemore one or that one with Danny Bonaducci, I'm not going to watch those
because
those
true.
Are depressing. I don't want to be depressed. I need to have a good time. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
All right, you want to talk about a few movie and television items, and then we'll get the heck out of here?
That sounds fine.
But if anybody at home is listening, you're going to want to stick around. You know what's coming up next, don't you?
A couple dudes talking about nonsensical things.
Do you know who those couple dudes are going to be talking to tonight? Do you know? Come on. The live
you know
show coming up at 9 o'clock.
Yes, I do know. Ms. Brigitte uh-huh. Nielsen?
That is correct. Brigitte Nielsen is coming up.
Yeah.
5 minutes or so. So if you're listening, please stick around.
It's a celebrity-filled night.
Yes, exactly. It's a huge night. Now, let me tell you about a TV show that I happen to like. You know the show Andy Barker, P.I.?
Yes. I've only seen one episode, though.
All right. I've seen, I think, 3, and I've watched them all on the Internet, okay? It was a funny show, and it's one of those shows that it's not, you know, laugh out loud funny, but you could see that it could be if they tweak it the right way.
I tell you, they should have called it Andy Barker CPAPI. That would be so funny.
Okay, yes. If you're not familiar, it's Andy Richter, and he is an accountant who ends up being mistaken for a private eye, and therefore he does accounting and he solves crime. Okay,
and sometimes simultaneously.
Yeah, and he does this with the assistance of the people who work in the same plaza as him. So you have Tony Hale, who was Buster on Arrested Development.
He's a movie.
Right. He runs a video store. Right. So he's always willing to assist him. He always has free time. And everything that happens, he's always equating it to some movie, even though it really doesn't fit.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's the real PI, who's now retired, who happened to occupy that office before him, which is where the confusion comes in, who's an old guy. He's a crusty old guy who talks like he's a 1940s detective.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. And then there's also the guy who runs a Euro place.
Yeah, I forget that. I only saw one, but I remember him. I don't remember him well.
Okay. Anyway, the point I'm bringing up, talking about how it was such a good, funny show, it's been canceled, by the way.
Oh, no.
It took four episodes for NBC to say, yeah, no thanks. They say, yeah, you know what? This idea that's clever and funny and different, we don't want it. You know what? We gave it a good try. But thanks. Thanks, NBC. Thanks for trying. Please.
But not really trying all that much.
No, they didn't. They stink. They pissed me off. I'm sorry. I'm a little annoyed about the whole thing. I'm going to try to find something that's not going to annoy me. In fact, I already know of something that's not going to annoy me. Here's something that's actually kind of cool. Okay?
All right.
Now, we're always talking about, like, superhero movies, right?
Uh-huh.
Now, here's one that, to me, sounds like a really cool idea, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not sure what this is going to be called. Okay?
Okay.
But here's the plot line. The Green Arrow. Okay?
Why are we always talking about the Green Arrow?
He got a lot of play while, you know, rolling around, hanging out on Smallville this year, so that, you know, that's why you have that. Okay?
Ugh. Okay. So, I'm over the Green Lantern.
But that's, okay, when we talk about the Green Lantern, that sentence will make sense. We're talking about the Green Arrow.
I'm over the Green Arrow.
Please get them straight. All right, now here's your story.
It was like 2 seconds ago. I don't understand me sometimes.
I don't understand you, like, at all. Anyway, here's your plot point, okay? It's not just a Green Arrow movie. What they're going to do to him is he's only Green Arrow for like 10 minutes into the movie. And
now
then
he's
gets
the one with a bunch of them, right?
Huh?
Green Arrow has many Green Arrows, right?
You mean he shoots a bunch of Green Arrows?
No, there's lots of them in different worlds.
No, that's the Green Lantern. Good God. Keep it straight.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I understand they both have green in the title. It could be confusing.
How many superheroes do you know are like that?
That have a bunch of what?
The same one. You don't see Spider-Man, Spider-Guy, Spider-Dude, Euro-Spider-Dude. Yay.
You don't have to say that, because...
Yay!
I can.
Oh, yeah, because you're so good at reading my mind.
Well, you know, listen. All right. I'm just going to tell you what the movie's about, and you be quiet.
I'm going to sit here and be quiet.
Thank you. So... he's the Green Arrow for about the first 10 minutes of the movie, and then he gets captured by the police. Is it Jim Jay? No? Okay, then I'm not interested. Okay. Then he gets captured by the police, and he gets put into jail. The rest of the movie takes place in prison. He gets thrown in one of those superhero jails. So now he's in there with all of these B and C level supervillains from the DC universe. Some of them are there because of him. So now it becomes like, it's like a superhero prison movie. Think about that concept.
So is it like Superhero Prison Break?
Yes. Okay. Super Prison Break. How's that?
Superfly.
No, it's not. No, it doesn't take place in the 70s. It doesn't take place in Watts. Superfly. Anyway, no, you don't have a reaction to that at all. I tell you about an idea.
No, I have no reaction.
Okay.
What you gonna do about that?
I'm gonna try to ignore you. Actually, you know what? You're depressing me so much, I'm going to bring up something that's actually depressing to me. We talked about how Bob Clark, director of A Christmas Story and Porky's.
That shouldn't be said in the same breath.
It shouldn't, but it is, because he did them like one year after the other, I think. How he passed away, another director, and this is a little-known director, his name was John Flynn, has also passed away. And to be honest with you, I'm not even sure. Let me see if it says here what happened to John Flynn. Now, most people are going to say, who the hell was John Flynn, and why the hell should I care? And maybe you don't care, but I'm going to go ahead and tell you about him anyway. Yeah, it doesn't really tell me how he passed away. When people talk about really good.
It does say genocide next to his name. That's a pretty horrific way to die.
It did?
Yeah, go back.
No, no. It said the name of the site that you get it from, which is Green Scene.
Oh.
Wow. How did you do that? How did you do that?
It was a glance.
That's amazing that you would go ahead and look at just the website that the news link is referring from, and you would come up with genocide. No, he didn't die of genocide.
I was like,
it was not.
Wow.
It was not an acute case of genocide.
What exactly kind of group is he in? Because I don't want to be in it.
Anyway.
Well, he wasn't a Polish-Italian, was he?
No, he was not.
Go ahead.
Mind if I talk about this for a second?
Go ahead.
Thank you.
Sorry.
There are two movies from the 70s that when you talk about gritty, badass crime dramas, this guy made that fit the bill. One is The Outfit with Robert Duvall from 1973.
What's it about?
Oh, man. You know what? Let me get you an actual thing to describe it for you. The other one is Rolling Thunder.
What's that about?
I'll tell you Rolling Thunder. Rolling Thunder is such a cool movie. It's also not on DVD. Rolling Thunder is a revenge film. And the storyline is William Devane comes home from Vietnam.
Uh-huh.
Okay? He's been a POW for, like, I don't know, a couple years.
Uh-huh.
So the town has a little parade for him, and then they give him, like, a silver coin for every day that he was in prison.
Uh-huh.
Right? And then when the parade's over, he's got to go back to his life and, like, his wife, you know, there's, like, a big distance there, and his kid is, you know, because he's been away for a few years. Then here comes the problem.
Oh, no.
Bad guys come into his house, kill his family.
What?
Take his silver coins, take him, cut off his hand, and leave him for dead. Well.
I'm sitting here with my mouth agape.
I'm telling you, don't worry. William Devane is not going to take this lying down. And he's not going to take the fact that he's missing a hand lying down, because he gets himself a hook, gets it, and then goes on a hunt for the dudes for the rest of the movie.
Wow.
Tell me that doesn't sound awesome.
Wow.
I'm telling you, Rolling Thunder is a badass. Here's how cool Rolling Thunder is, okay? And when I say cool, you could put it in quotes for this comment. Quentin Tarantino's distributing company that he uses for, like, little international movies that he likes, and or if he might find a cult film and re-release it, it's mm-hmm. called Rolling Thunder Pictures because of that film.
And
the logo is like a hook.
Oh, okay.
There you go. So anyway, John Flynn also did Bestseller, which was a good movie with James Woods. He did Lock Up with Sylvester Stallone, which was not a great movie, but it's probably better than you would think it is. Anyway, he was a solid director. He hadn't done a work in probably about 8 years. Anyway, he passed away. I find that to be very sad.
Well, I feel better to know that he did not pass away from genocide.
Yes, I feel better about that too, because you know, genocide's not something to take lightly.
No.
You don't want
not Holly Golightly.
You don't want to catch genocide. If that's going around in your neighborhood, I would suggest you get out.
You get out quick.
Get out now. All right. You know what? We are almost out of time. Like I say, please stick around for the live test show. Please go to podcastalley.com and vote for the Radio Dan Show. This is for all you podcast listeners, by the way. You live listeners can do this too. Podcastalley.com. Do a search for the show. Now, of course, if you
put in Radio Dan,
right,
you come up as number 10.
I don't know why. You can even put in Radio Dan Show. You can
the
put
Radio
it in quotes.
Dan Show.
Yeah, I still come up as 10th. Anyway, so look for me 10th on the list, and then hit the vote button when you see me. Now, our goal is to make it in the top 10 list. We need like 200 people to vote.
Before the end of the month.
Before the end of the month, so we can be in there. And you know what happens if we get in there? Nothing! We just have some, like, satisfaction. We feel really good about ourselves.
We can pump the fist and say, yes.
Yes, we did that. Yes, we all got together, and we did something that meant nothing.
I know. The global orgasm people would be very happy to hear about this.
That's true. And you know what? It's funny, because really, when you think about it, we do something that means nothing about 5 times a week, right on the air.
Actually, we do it a lot more than that.
Mm-hmm. All right, so coming up tomorrow night, we have DVD releases, and then after that, it's, you know, the usual end-of-the-week crappy shows. So, you know, Tune in if you want.
Yeah, but you know what? You have to tune in because after Thursday, it's going to be a week before they hear us again.
Well, I don't know. I think we're going to be going to Vegas in the weekend, but I think we'll be doing updates while we're there. At the very least, we'll be doing updates all the time. Anyway, live test show's coming up with Brigitte Nielsen. Also, Antebert and Brad are going to be there too, I hear. So stick around. Say good night, Jessica.
Good night, Jessica.
Yamma, 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 yamma. Whoopee-doo, Scooby-Doo, and gobbledygook.